Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name is Adam Labaz. Thank you for joining us for episode 41 and the last episode for the term, Rick. As you said in the last episode, you're off on a week's leave.
I am on a week's leave, Adam, and I must admit I'm kind of relieved that back in February I asked for just a little week off. I'm just a bit burnt out.
Yep.
Yeah, and I know we're both a bit... I mean, we're still enjoying our job,
but
I think we're both a bit jaded, a bit sort of burnt out. And, you know, look, that's what happens. It's late in the year, it's late in the term.
Yeah, we need to recharge the batteries. That's the way I like to see it. We need to get to the holidays to recharge the batteries. But I also think I really like that you take that week off, because I don't think we do it enough as teachers. We look ahead and go, you know what, I've got all this leave. Why don't I just take a week? And for some, it's to go on a bit of a holiday or something. But for others, it's just to go, I'll do a few jobs around the house. I'll do some things that normally I can't get to, and just so I can come back a bit refreshed.
Well, as Victorian government teachers, we're entitled to it, aren't we? And we're entitled to take it for what we want to take it for. And it is recharging the batteries. And that's kind of what I'm looking forward to next week. And actually just being a little bit mindful and... topical. We'll be talking about that later on.
We will be. And before we talk about some of the other topics and our special guest for tonight, I did want to throw my thoughts and our thoughts out to all the graduates who either this week, next week, and at the moment who are doing their VIT registrations. It's a really hectic time for the first year grads, because not only are they doing the VIT, but for many of them, they're reapplying for their jobs. And it's for a first year grad who's still doing all their planning and things. Geez, it's a hectic time, mate.
It's a hugely hectic time, Adam, and I completely concur with you, and good on you for saying it. So if you are one of those grads out there, we are thinking of you, because I believe the system's unfair that you have to kind of provide all this evidence for what you're doing as well as applying for jobs. Yep. Some would argue that like whatever they're doing in their VIT can be included in an application, but it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't, because they've still got to answer all the criteria. They've still got to go through and do that. And the way I see it, if a grad comes with a brilliant VIT, gets the big tick, why can't they just be rolled over? Well, clearly they're doing their job well. Clearly that they're ingrained in the school, they've taken everything on board. Why wouldn't you keep them? Why do we have to then put it out to all these people? I know there's that idea of fairness and all that sort of stuff, but gee, it's tough. You've got to do your VIT and then go reload again and do it all over again.
It's tough. And it's a big issue that comes up a lot that you've just brought up, and it's a merit and equity issue. And I see the side of it where jobs should be for everyone. So if a job is up there and being advertised, that any qualified people should be able to apply, but also businesses, like any other business, Adam, should be able to say, show the track record of an employee and show the reason why they should be employed again. So it's
it's topical for tonight. Topical in another one of our topics. And we do have a wonderful special guest on tonight.
Well, we're really excited, Adam. We don't have anyone in the studio, the dining table studio with us tonight. But we are looking forward to chatting to Lee Burns via Skype tonight. Lee's made his time available from his home quite a distance away, Adam.
He's quite a distance away, so he's done very well.
Yeah, we'd be driving for a couple of hours if we got in and left now. So Lee worked with us in our TL21C project a couple of years ago that we've mentioned. Is a really important member of the VicPLN on Twitter, and I'm sure he'll be familiar to a lot of listeners. So a big episode to finish term three.
So, mate, let's call Lee now.
Let's do it.
Well, Rick, as we spoke off the top in the intro, we do have a terrific special guest with us tonight, and someone we've been meaning to get on for a while. We know Lee through where the TL21C that we did 2 years ago now, so it feels like it was only yesterday, doesn't it? It really does feel like it was only yesterday.
Well, it's great to have him on, Adam, and I feel privileged, and it's like the old part of the old team getting back together. It felt the same at DigiCon when some of us caught up at the DigiCon conference, and Lee's been kind enough to join us via Skype.
Yeah.
All the way from the mountain, Lee. Welcome.
That's right, I'm currently on the side of a hill. Thanks for having us here, guys. Not sure about the terrific Adam, but I'll try to do my best.
Look, mate, what I wanted to say off the top is, like myself, you are, we're both bald, mate. And what?
Oh, really?
That has to be said, but the bald breeds wisdom. Yes. Now, Rick would jump in and say, oh, that's rubbish, but see, he would know because he's not bald. So that's why we've actually got you on, mate, for that brilliant wisdom.
And also high levels of testosterone, man.
Yeah, squirts out our face in hair form.
Well, I think sometimes my intelligence gets hooked up in my curls in my head. I'm not sure, but, you know, we'll talk about that maybe off air.
Yeah, we might. But it is really good to have Lee on, and Rick, obviously going by Skype, for our listeners out there, the quality will change slightly for this segment.
Yeah, look, it sure will. And thanks Lee for joining us, and it is our final episode, and It's nice to have a secondary teacher on, mate. And I know that you're aware of, in coming into the episode tonight, we were going to try and compare the primary and secondary side of things. Mate, do you want to give us just a quick overview of your role in the secondary school you're in? Because I know that you're teaching compared to a primary teacher, quite a list of in-depth subjects.
Yeah, so I've been at Layla Secondary College now. This is going into my fifth year. I taught kind of like all year levels from 7 to 12. I'm a English and humanities teacher, but mate, I'm obviously UK trained and was a geography teacher over there. So it's been a little bit of a transition, you know, picking up the English subject and the humanities subject. So quite a bit of a learning curve. Our student base is quite a diverse demographic. Lots of immigrant families, lots of Arabic families. So you have Lebanese, Iraqi, Iranian families there as well as. Lots of Greeks and Italians and obviously the Anglo kids. So yeah, it's quite a diverse mix over at our place.
See, that's amazingly different to what Adam and I experience at our school, isn't it?
Absolutely. Like hearing some of the backgrounds there, I don't think we've really got anyone of those backgrounds at our school. So do you find, Lee, having that diverse demographic, does that challenge you daily, or do you find it actually more rewarding to teach in that sort of setting?
Yeah, kind of both, really. There's obviously like massive challenges just in terms of like language. There's, for example, a couple of weeks ago we had a young boy, Ali, come into my geography class, so a year 8 boy. He's only been in the country for 2 weeks from Iraq. Very, very little English. So, and because of the whole funding system, and I'm not too, you know, cluey on the whole, you know, funding issues and stuff, I do know that it's a massive, it is really complicated and complex, but, you know, there wasn't enough money in the school or in the pot, you know, to have an integration aid in the actual classroom with him, certainly in my class. So, you know, you kind of left your own devices there, and you have to do what you can do, you know, to make him feel part of the class and to do as best you can, really.
You have to kind of put on, and we've talked about this in previous podcasts, about teachers putting on various hats in terms of what role they play, and that's just another one, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's kind of, you know, a new student coming in, they clearly obviously need that support, but it's so hard to get sometimes, to get them through the system and to get that support that, like you said, Lee, you kind of got to make them feel as much part of the class as you possibly can. That's really, at the stage of his school life in Australia, that's really all you can do.
Yeah, and that's it. And, you know, obviously as educators, and, you know, we're pretty in touch with, you know, the newest initiatives that are going around and the best ideas. But sometimes when someone has, you know, such a basic or, so, you know, no literacy in terms of, you know, English speaking, the best thing you can do is, you know, to make him feel, you know, happy in the class and, you know, try and build or allow him to build relationships in the classroom as well, you know, so we can have a starting point and he can, you know, get the help he needs and progress, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you mentioned in the outset about your role at the school. So you're teaching, aside from English, you're teaching some humanities and history and geography.
Yeah.
Now, those two subjects for us, if Adam and I kind of come in terms of being assessed, don't really hit till about sort of year 4.
Yeah.
How do you find, like, at and look, we're laymen's here. I mean, we don't really know a lot. Is geography and history kind of treated as a specialist subject, or is it kind of a core subject all through the secondary years that the students do?
Yeah, look, they are two specialist subjects in their own right, but they kind of get lumped into the humanities bracket along with, you know, civics and citizenship, economics as well. So it's really, and there's only, you know, for example, I'll see my year 8 class, you know, 7 periods over the fortnight. So there's a lot of content to get packed in there. There's the new Australian curriculum has come in our school in the last year. So there's a massive change, and teachers are, you know, always seem to just be trying to find the feet, you know, with delivering the content and, you know, generating resources and things like that. So yeah, so it is a bit of quite a big challenge, really.
And that's interestingly, you're covering so many areas, and as you said, you've got to pack so much in. Do you find it really challenging? Do you find you're doing a lot of work outside of school time, or are you given enough time to be able to plan so many different lessons for so many different classes?
No, not really. I think, you know, every teacher, you know, whether it's primary or secondary, that, you know, you'd always like the luxury of having more time, but you just have to do, you know, as best you can with the time you've got, and there is a lot of, you know, running around. And I'll be honest with you, like in the last 5 years, I've never really felt like on top of my game, you know, in terms of like everything is in order and you're always running around and chasing your tail. It is an issue, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. And are you finding, like, in terms of the content at that year level, and this is more, I guess, more of a personal question for just that I'm interested in, is it quite Australian focused like it is at the primary level, or do those two kind of areas of humanity kind of branch out to more of a global focus?
I'll be honest with you, I think there is still like a massive, it is quite Australian centric, and that's quite, if you think about the kind of kids that we have as well, who, you know, they may have only been in the country, you know, for a few years, or they may just be first generation Australians. So when they go home, basically their you know, strong cultural identity is not linked to Australia. So to try and let them see the relevance of that is really hard in itself.
Oh, absolutely, and it would be, particularly in those early stages when they're new to the school. That's exactly what I was thinking. I guess we just want to move on to like another topic. Adam and I were talking about when we're planning the episode during the week. I mean, you're kind of seeing, at the age group that you're teaching, you're really getting to see what the next generation of kids might look like when they become adults. And I guess we just wanted to gauge at this stage, I mean, obviously you've got, like you mentioned earlier, you've got like a range of backgrounds at your school. But what do you see in the current generation of students coming through? What in terms of who they are as people, like, what do you see?
Well, this is one of the frustrations that I have personally. You can talk about what do you see, you know, in terms of the students coming through, but all I see is the students in my school, which is vastly different than, you know, some of the secondary age students, you know, that would be around your area, you know, in terms of even, you know, we're a government school and you have a lot of independent schools, you know, down the road and close to the city or wherever. And I don't know, the experiences that they have and the expectations that they have set, you know, from home as well is different. So I'm not sure if that makes sense or not.
No, yeah, it does. It's a very general question. I guess.
I think. Sorry to jump in there, Rick. I think as well, Lee, going on from that, to segue into when you teach. Obviously, I think I've always been scared of teaching up at a secondary level because I find that I would find it harder to motivate the students and find out what really gets them going. What have you found over the last few years is a really good teaching method or a way to approach a certain topic that will help to motivate them and really hit their passions and really get them enthusiastic for their learning?
I think the key that I've found, or the successes that I've had, is trying to approach it, you know, from their interests. So instead of trying to, you know, make them bend and come into like your mode of communication, if that makes sense, like try and approach it from them. So, you know, that they are huge consumers of, you know, media from YouTube and, you know, things like Vine and social media and stuff. So if you can try and look into those avenues a little bit, you know, so like a class Instagram account, you know, you're going, the kids are already set up with accounts, they're already there, and they're much more eager to come across to you rather than, you know, there's nothing more that my students hate anyway, is, you know, trying to remember a new username or password, which, you know, we take for granted it's easy to do, but they, you know, my kids really struggle with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. Now, just getting back to Adam's intro, we mentioned how the three of us have collaborated in a group during the TL21C project. And I think a lot of views of primary teachers, particularly graduate primary teachers who don't have any experience of secondary, is that the collegiality with secondary teachers is maybe lacking because of the individual subjects that you have to teach. What's collegiality like at your school and how does it kind of work?
Look, it's always there, and there's always obviously a massive need and a massive push to be more collegial, but it's just in terms of time. You know, you literally, take my day, for example, and I'm not, everybody's in the same boat, but, you know, you might have, you know, six lessons in a day, which is a full, you know, six on day. After every lesson, you know, you have to move, pack up your things, move to a new classroom, wait for the kids to get there. In between that, you know, you check in emails, and there is an expectation that, you know, you do, you know, check your emails, you know, every few hours or every hour or whatever, and some teachers really do really struggle with that, and by nature of not, you know, being on top of that communication, you might lose, you know, important information, or, you know, not be on top of your game or
very, yeah, that's right. And look, coming back to the ICT stuff too, and that's going down a lot, obviously, with, you know, going with your staff and that collegiate role and that sort of stuff. I've heard along the grapevine that you're doing a radio show. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's right. Radio LSC, for want of a better name, but I think it's sticking for the time being.
Well, that almost sounds, just between you and I, that almost sounds like Radio LSD. Like a bit of an avant-garde radio show.
With a bit of One Direction played in between. just again, like it is, you know, everybody, you know, talks about how busy they are and stuff, but I think there is always a little bit of time there to do something extracurricular that is rewarding for you. So something that I had probably for the last 12 months, I've wanted to get some sort of, you know, school radio station up. It's a stereotypical, you know, school thing, isn't it? But it's just finding that time. So I'd send messages out in the school bulletin in the morning asking for, you know, interested students, and I might get 10. And yeah, it just went on and on and on, really. And it got to the point where I basically had two girls come to me one day and said, "Sir, what is happening with this radio station?" And that kind of gave me the boot and, you know, the fire in the belly to say, right, we're going to get a radio, some sort of radio show out this week, which was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. So, and yeah, we've not really looked back since. So every Friday, there's a 20 or 30 minute radio segment. And there's it's really kind of brought on a, you know, banter between students and, you know, older kids complaining about the music, but you can have a joke with them and stuff. It's been good.
Yeah, fantastic.
I just think it's fantastic. And it's a great example, again, of how some of this stuff is not for all kids. We've always sort of said that. I remember John Pierce, that was always his mantra when I worked with him, that some of this stuff that we introduce, it's not for all kids, but the ones that it is for, it's worth championing.
Yeah, and that's it. You only need, for me anyway, you only need like one or two students who, you know, see the value in something and really appreciate it. And that makes everything worthwhile. Like it is a lot of work, but that's what we're here for, isn't it, really?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Now, mate, I just want to kind of finish on for the segment, sharing a little anecdote with you about a friend of mine who did teaching rounds in secondary schools here in Australia, obviously while he was at university. He told me about a day that he went to a secondary college in Geelong where he was running a study on a film. And in the classroom, obviously, they dimmed the lights so they could watch a segment from the film. And each time they dimmed the lights in the classroom, he'd feel a little something sort of ricocheting off his forehead every time. And he realised after about the third time that he dimmed the lights to watch this clip from a film that there were kids pea-shooting him through their pens with rolled up bits of wet paper.
Fantastic.
So every time he dimmed the lights, they'd pea-shoot at him and get him in the forehead. And that's tough to deal with, but gee, I laughed. However, I was just wondering whether you had anything in terms of your training, anything with the secondary year level that, you know, combats or compares with that.
Nothing lately that springs to mind. There probably would be if I gave it some thought, but I always remember, you know, on my on the PGCE back in the UK, so it's the postgraduate certificate, your teaching equivalent, there was I was in quite a tough all-boys school in Manchester, and I always remember, you know, you dress up quite smartly with your shirt and tie, and one bloody year 10 boy came along and peanutted me. Are you guys familiar with what the old peanut is?
No.
All right.
Sounds funny.
Imagine your tie, the long section of your tie, they get hold of that, and they yank it so hard that it goes as small as a little peanut, and it's impossible to get off. You've got to basically cut your tie off. But, I mean, he's scarpered. I didn't know who it was, so that was it.
That's fantastic.
How can I ask how he got a hold of your tie though, without you stopping it?
I was just flapping around. I was unaware. I was focused on other things, Rick.
I can see that flapping around too.
And how long did it take to get off?
Oh, I think some scissors were involved.
That's fantastic. Oh. That's always comes out to me. That's why secondary school scares me, because the kids, they just know more. They know how to get stuck in anymore. I couldn't see a primary school kid pea shooting me. I just couldn't see it happening.
They're absolutely ruthless if you leave yourself.
Absolutely. So can you just give us the name of that tie thing again? What is it?
Peanutting.
Peanutting. So if any Australian secondary teachers have had the experience, please share it and show some solidarity for Lee.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Good stuff.
So, Lee, look, mate, we're going to wrap it up there. We really want to say thank you for joining us tonight. I know with a young daughter, it's hard to do. So, mate, we really appreciate your time. And
She's lurking in the other room somewhere. She's dying to burst in. So
yeah, there you go. So we better wrap it up. But thank you so much, mate. We really appreciate you giving us your thoughts from a secondary perspective.
No, it's all right. Thanks for having us, guys. We'll see you again.
Thanks, mate. You've been a great champion of the podcast. So yes. We'll try and have you on again sometime.
Keep up the good work. Thanks, fellas. Bye.
Well, Adam, for our second topic tonight, we're going to talk about a video that was shared with us. Well, we were tagged in it on Facebook during the week after last week's episode, and we thought we'd put it into this episode. And it was shared by Fairly Pritchard, one of our listeners, a Victorian teacher, at Fairls on Twitter, if you've ever seen her tweets. Very good on popular culture and the Geelong Cats, I might add. But thanks, Fairly, for sharing it, because it was a really interesting video shared by AJ+, which is a global news community. Yep. They've got a Facebook page and a YouTube channel. And the video was called Teachers Say What's Wrong with Education in the US. And it was published last week, so it's quite up to date.
Mm. And it's the sort of video, mate, that I found that as I watched it, I was nodding my head constantly at the comments and at the things, nodding my head and relating to what is clearly a major problem in some states in the US. Obviously, that's the US, but if we can, there was a lot of quotes and a lot of things that I think a lot of teachers in Australia would sit there and watch and nod their head to.
Yeah, indeed. There seems to be one of the crises that they kind of mentioned in the video is a teacher shortage in certain parts of the United States. Probably seems a bit more extreme than what it is here.
Mm, definitely.
But some of the universal issues that came up, and by the way, the video is just teachers, American teachers, talking about their job.
Mm.
And a couple of things they brought up, like you said, really resonate with us back here in Oz. And there was one teacher that said that, and he didn't say these words, but it made me think of goodwill.
Mm.
We mentioned this before, that goodwill is expected in the job no matter what. Now, yes, it should be, because it's a very personal job. So there is a degree of goodwill that you need to give.
Mm.
But this gentleman said in the video that we're never asked if we can. It's just asked to go above and beyond and go the extra mile. Mm. There's no, you're never asked if you can. You are just sort of told that that's what you need to do.
Yep.
And I think there is a point to that. And at the point that we're at in the term, we're feeling a little burnt out.
Yep.
And sure, I love doing things for the kids because that's what it's all about.
Mm.
But sometimes you're not asked if you can. It's almost forgotten that, hang on, what else could be going on in your life outside the school?
Mm. And that's right, because there is so much going on. And as you said, this time of the term, you're tired. You're not frustrated, but you're kind of, as we said off the top, you're burnt out, but there are still so many expectations that it's not, listen guys, there's this extra one to do, can you spare the time? It's, here's this extra thing to do, have it to me by the end of the week. That's kind of what happens, and you're going, oh, what, on top of everything else I've got to do, so now I've got to give up another hour of my time that I could be spending with my family, that I could be spending doing so many other things, that I have to give it up. And that's the thing, I nodded, and I actually showed my wife, I said, listen to this quote. And she nodded and said, oh, I can totally understand where he's coming from, and I can totally understand why it relates to teachers so much, watching you and the time you give up. It's, you know, it's something that I think a lot of us need to step back and take note of.
And I think appreciation is lacking too for a lot of Oz teachers as well. And in some recent results that were shown at a staff meeting for our school, this has happened in previous school, in a previous school that I've worked at. There seems to be this hole in the parent surveys, where parents seem to believe that extracurricular opportunities are not prevalent at the school. And I believe, if I read what I saw in the last couple of weeks right, that's happened again at our school. Now, I've never seen staff work so extra hard at a school to provide extracurricular opportunities for the students, and not just for all the high achieving students. Mm. So that's something that needs to be fixed in terms of not just parents fixing what they say, but the way that this message gets across to the school community. Because I know that I'm working on a lot of projects outside my teaching at the moment.
Yep.
To think that parents are sitting back thinking that maybe I'm just coming and going at the usual working hours is actually a little disappointing.
Well, it's not only it's farcical. It's farcical that people seem to think that I turn up at 10 to 9 and that I'm gone by 10 to 4. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I know you, like, we get there quite early in the morning, you know. Even a night like tonight, like, we had a meeting, I didn't get out till 5 and, you know, those sorts of things. People don't understand really what goes into it. And from that as well, the other thing that you and I got out of it that we thought was really, really relates is the increase in how much we test our students. Now, clearly over in the US at the moment, there is a heck of a lot of testing, and there's testing, testing, testing. I think you and I could agree that there has been, in the last 5 years, a large increase in testing. Now, there would be some who would call it assessment. Mm. I still think it's testing. Mm. I mean, assessment is you are getting something out of it. The kids are still sitting a test, as far as I'm concerned, or doing a test with you, or doing something. That's the brunt of it. Assessment is the next step of taking that test result and assessing it and using it to inform your teaching. But it's still testing. Would you agree?
Yeah, I actually do. I think there's too much now. I think that it's changed. It was coming in when you and I started our careers, and I think it's coming more. And I kind of feel like at the moment that there's more testing than there is of teaching time. Mm. And that's just how it is. But when you pile it on top of the preparation that a lot of schools feel like they need to do for NAPLAN, and then the NAPLAN test, I think people maybe even get more exasperated with NAPLAN because it's surrounded by a lot of other testing that has to be done. Pre and post tests for certain units.
What do you think about pre and post testing?
I think there's a place for it.
Yep.
I think particularly in mathematics, because there's no doubt that if using the zone of proximal development, it shows growth
yes.
at the end. But With so much to cram in, it can feel like sometimes that you're doing another pretest before you feel like you've even delved into the past, the topic you were doing before.
That's right. Because doing the pretest and then the post-test is almost two lessons. You want to give them the time, you want to go over it and things. So there's two lessons gone out of, say you've got 2 weeks of fractions, you got to do the pretest, and then you've got to do the post-test and try and fit in everything in between. It's a really tough balancing act.
Yeah, and look, it sure is. So we really encourage you to go and watch the video. I really enjoyed it. And I kind of, sometimes like when you watch teachers, regardless from what country they're from, talk like they do in this video, non-teachers tend to, and I've heard that from people who are I'm good friends with, can make kind of disparaging comments about whinging teachers and so on. But I think it doesn't matter. You've got to watch these sort of comments ring true because it is such a personal job. You know, like every moment of our day is dealing with young people and colleagues. So on top of, you know, that, you really, there's no time out. Every decision you make is when you're still, you have to do while you're surrounded by people asking for your time.
Yeah, that's right. So I want to agree with Rick. I really encourage you tonight to go and have a look at that video, and we'd love you to let us know what you think about it.
And thanks again, Fairly, for sharing it.
So Rick, I have to ask you, mate, how often would you do yoga in your classroom?
It's funny you say that. Myself, not never.
Yep.
But yoga is offered on Monday nights at our school by a parent who's trained in it for staff.
Yes.
And there are a regular group of staff that partake in it.
Yep. I bring it
it's
up, mate.
It's something that's coming into classrooms, Adam.
It is coming into classrooms. I bring it up because I came across an article in The Atlantic about mindfulness education in schools and meditation. And it really centered around bringing mindfulness back into the classroom through meditation. Now, this is purely me, and this is a little bit of an insight into who I am. I instantly see something like meditation, and my two thoughts are, waste of time, and if I was asked to do it, where in the world would I fit it in? However, I must say that then sitting down with it and reading it, and then discussions with you, mindfulness is something that these days, with everything else going on, can actually get overlooked quite often.
Yeah, and it's interesting to hear how your thinking's kind of changed. Article was fascinating. It talked about a school in New York, a really disadvantaged school, and a teacher who's been trained in a particular mindfulness program and is delivering it to his kids. This teacher has had I mean, this is an example of what he was experiencing. Had one student arrive one day with a stab wound at school. So I mean, this is far removed from what you and I are dealing with. But I kind of see mindfulness and meditation as two separate things, because meditating is something that I've got some friends that really are into it, and it really helps them. It's not something that I can kind of manage. I get a bit fidgety. It's not what I can do.
Bit of ADHD, mate.
I've tried. It just doesn't seem to work. But mindfulness is something that I'm still really learning about, but the last few years, it's something that I've tried to build into my working day particularly. I see one big thing about mindfulness is taking a moment to be in the moment and think about what you're doing right now and the things that are good in life.
And I agree, and I think mindfulness is something that the kids can overlook, and particularly like you said, in schools that you know, are lower funded and have got that demographic that really find it difficult, the kids, students finding something positive about their lives and finding the positive experiences around them and things can actually be really hard, because it can be overshadowed by what's going on at home, which is, you know, totally understandable. But actually being able to bring something in like that, or offering the opportunity, whether that's someone offering it at lunchtime, people coming in and spending 15 minutes and doing something like that, I actually think there is a place for it, whether that's a place in the classroom or a place in the school as a whole, in terms of, like I said, offering it so someone actually offers it on a Thursday at lunchtime once a week or a fortnight. Having it somewhere in the school, I think, could be of benefit to a lot of students in school today.
I think so. Look, I think you can actually be mindful without knowing you're being mindful with your students if you're just a good, caring person. Now, just about all teachers are. Most teachers are. There are some mindful schools in America that's mentioned in the article that have programs, and there's parts of the education system that don't agree with it, and apparently there's not quite yet enough evidence to show that mindfulness in the classroom can change academic results for the better. But I think mindfulness really focuses on the social and emotional well-being. If you're taking a little moment in a lesson to you know, look after how we think, or look after your well-being, then to me that's helping the students understand it. Like, and today I took my kids on a power walk in between two of our lessons. Went outside, fresh air, just a walk.
Great idea.
4 minutes I reckon we'll go on for. Came back in. Now I see that as kind of being mindful. We walked past the fruit trees that are growing near our veggie patch, and it was kind of, and we took a moment to see the flowers that are blooming on the trees, and we forgot about what we had to do next, you know. Yep.
And it really can tune their minds back in, that opportunity to go outside. And what you said before about it, there's no link to academic results. Now, I mean, obviously academic results is the basis of what we're going for here, but it's not everything. I don't understand why something like mindfulness has to be linked to academic data. Why can't it be linked to their emotional well-being and all those things, and actually having students who are in tune and coming to school happy and they're feeling safe and they've got more understanding of the world around them and they can actually go out and be better citizens in their town? It doesn't necessarily have to be so academically based. Do you agree? Or
yeah, still... yeah, I do. I kind of get frustrated when something has to be measured.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I can kind of see the point that there has to, if this is going to be something that gets funding and something that becomes into the curriculum.
Yep.
I can see that there needs to be a kind of an end goal. Mm. But it is annoying, isn't it? When
it is.
Something has to be measured. Why can't it just be something that where you can see? Almost like an anecdotal thing where you can see kids feeling better about themselves.
And how far is it going to go? We're going to start taking things out of the canteen. Well, we had hot dogs at the canteen, but there was no data to suggest that it helped with number and algebra. So we can't have hot dogs in the school. I mean, I can understand a lot of it, but mindfulness to me doesn't have to link into academic data. It's got to link in with our students and their well-being.
Absolutely. And just to finish off, I think we just need to mention that being mindful and being sort of in the moment and thinking about the good things in life can really help, I think, stress and job satisfaction for teachers. We forget that. It's not just for the students that we need to look after ourselves. And I think it goes a long way to helping with that.
It does. So look, if you use any form of mindfulness in your school, if that's yoga, if that's meditation, if it's just something else to get your students in tune with their learning, we'd love you to share it.
Well, it's the final anecdote for Term 3, Adam, and I'm kind of being a bit tired in that. I'm just looking forward to sitting back and listening. Well, so off you go.
The pressure's on because we got a lot of good feedback about the banana story from last week that I've actually shared with others, and I've had a staff member bring up and want to talk about it and stuff. It's I'm feeling under the pump.
I understand that. There was no embellishment last week, no. I must admit, and I do appreciate the feedback on it. But please, over to you.
Look, what I want to talk about tonight, and that has actually happened to me today, is wardrobe malfunctions at school. Things going wrong with your clothes or things not going right. It doesn't have to be you, but it's someone in your school. Now, I can't show, but I can't stand up today. I must have sat down today. I must have done something, and I felt a little bit breezy around my legs and that sort of stuff, and went to the toilet recess to have a bit of a look. Now, I don't know if I can show you, but I've got a rip in the old jeans.
It's a decent hole out of it.
And it is a decent hole. And I kind of went, ooh, it's in a kind of a spot where there's no, you know, underpants showing or anything like that. But
it is quite high.
It is high-ish, showing off my lovely calves. But I did want to bring up, like, that's the kind of thing that, as a teacher, can happen. And what do you do?
I think, well, you're lucky because it kind of is in a sheltered spot. So if you were sitting down for some of the day, but would any students notice?
No students notice. But it did remind me a couple of years ago where this might have been going back 2 or 3 years, where I had planning time and I went over to our BER building where we got the open classrooms. And I was doing a little bit of photocopying, and one of the 1-2 classes was playing a game of, I don't know, it was something like sit down, stand up, and one of them was squatting, another one was standing up. So I knew the teacher quite well, and so I came up the back and thought, I'll join in, guys. Hey, what's the next one? Right. And squat or something like that. I squatted down, rip, 10 centimeter rip in my jeans. I jumped straight up, and the kids are going, that's not the one, Mr. Lazar. I went, oh, you guys just have fun playing there and stuff. I'll see you later. Waddle out, and then went straight over to the principal's office and said, have a look at this. Can I go home, please, and change my pants? Thankfully, I was only living around the corner. It was a huge tear. You see my jocks, see everything. And I kind of had that, you know, that walk where you're walking with your legs together? You're kind of walking over and stuff. Yeah. I had to do that. Otherwise, it would, you know, my jeans would have been flopping in the breeze.
So the things you remember, I mean, the things I remember as a primary student are, you know, the things that stand out, you think, how do I remember that? I mean, I can recall being on a hike up the Yuyangs, which are, for those people who don't know, the Yuyangs are mountains just outside Geelong that you can see on the drive from the airport. And I remember there were some parent helpers who came with us. I was about 12, I think it was year 6, and I slipped over on the gravel path,
remember.
And these two mums spent the next few minutes saying that I had a hole in my pants because I think I was making a bit of a scene about it. Not crying,
as you would.
Falling over, yeah. Thanks very much. But remember thinking, why do they keep talking about they can see my underpants? Yeah. You know, that really frustrated me.
But parents doing it too, talking about, oh, we can see your underpants. Well, thanks very much. What do you want me to do about it?
Well, these days, it'd be kind of seen as a little bit odd, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. Have you ever, going with that falling over, as you know, my white line fever is well known. I've done that a few times going out to kick the footy and stuff and trying to go for that big mark. And I've slipped on my backside a few times and gone inside a bit muddy. Has that ever happened to you?
No, look, it hasn't. I have slipped over once on yard duty, but I remember no one saw it.
That would be good to see you slip it over. That would be hilarious.
Well, you know what?
From a great height.
You talking about your stories going out on yard duty to kick a footy, it's one of the only times that I wish Two Regular Teachers was a video cast so we could kind of maybe get the hidden camera to see you out there on yard duty with the white line fever.
Yeah, but it would be good to see because it's not. And it was just one of those, you know, going up for a big mark or give me the ball, I'll do the banana from the pocket, and you go to kick it and slip flat on your backside. They love it, get stuck in you. So look, I've had that wardrobe malfunction today, mate, and I got through okay. It happened early in the day and no one noticed, thank goodness.
Well, you've done well, Adam, and I just want to finish off with a shout out to a couple of our listeners and people in our PLN, because one of my wardrobe malfunctions was when I got asked up to the Department of Education to talk about the future of global student blogs, which are now Global 2.
Yes.
And I did reveal this detail to Kynan Robinson, Andrew Williamson, and John Pearson, a couple of others who were there on the day, that on a toilet break, my fly broke and that I was wearing a sweater that day. I don't know whether... the boys admitted that they didn't see me do the old pull down as I sat down when I came back into the meeting. Yep. But being at the Department with a broken fly, it's all I could focus on.
It would be too. You know, I just did the hand go over the front. I just want to talk about Global too. Why don't you lift your other hand up, Rick? No, it's fine where it is. I mean, that sort of stuff.
So it was like that. Yeah.
So if you've had a wardrobe malfunction, hopefully someone's had one out there worse than me. Please let us know. So, Rick, that brings an end to the Two Regular Teachers podcast for Term 3, and it'd be easy to admit that obviously it's been a bit bumpier than previous terms we've had with this podcast in terms of getting it out there, but we've resolved ourselves to make sure that Term 4 is going to be a much better term in terms of the podcast output.
Well, there's not much standing in our way, Adam, unless unforeseen circumstances. So it is, look, that is it for Term 3. But aside from having a few breaks, we've had some great episodes. Mm. So look, please go back if you're still catching up and listen back to some of our episodes from the term. We'd like to just give a quick shout out to Aaron Davis, part of our PLN, who shot us some articles during the week that sort of took some of the thinking from our previous episode further. So we've got some reading for over the holidays. Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. And thanks again for Lee Burns for joining us via Skype. And I hope he's been able to get his dinner in and put his little girl to bed in time tonight.
That's right. And look, thank you to all our listeners. We always get wonderful feedback from various sources, and we really, really appreciate it. So we hope everyone has a wonderful break. I know it starts at the end of next week, but we hope you have a wonderful break. I've been Adam Lavaz.
I've been Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been Two Regular Teachers.